Hey everybody, Bones here. Quick content warning for this episode. During the interview, there are discussions involving mentions of ableism, the concept of death, and reaction and handling of COVID-19, especially in regard to the United Kingdom. So for those who need a heads up or would like to skip those sections, we have the timestamps for that conversation in the episode description, as well as in our transcript, so that you have a heads up on it. With that said, enjoy!
You're listening to a Fourth Strike production.
I'm watching the sky as it starts to go.
Hello, and welcome to Idleboard. I'm Bones, and I use they, them pronouns. In this podcast, I'll be interviewing members of the Garages about their songs, the creation process, and possible inspirations. My guest for this episode is Garages band member Jennifer Cat. Thanks for coming on, Jennifer Cat. Can you tell us your pronouns, your pre-song ritual, and what song you'll be talking about with us today?
Yeah, hi. My pronouns are she, her. My pre-song ritual is a nice cup of tea, because I'm a stereotype. And today I'll be talking about the song Solar Eclipse from the album Number 14.
Awesome. All right. So first off, when and why did you join the Garages?
So I joined the Garages. Oh, wow. No, you've got me saying Garages.
Oh,
terrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess you usually call it the Garages, huh?
Garages, yeah. So, yeah. So I joined the Garages. It was around season 11. I'd watched the People Make Games video about Blazeball and just thought, gotta get in on that. That looks great. So I was sort of aware from the beginning that the Garages, the band, existed because they were briefly mentioned in that video. And I thought that that was just so cool. So yeah, I kind of got in on Blazeball, joined the Discord, kind of vaguely mentioned in the Garages chat. I love the fact that you make music, that's so cool, and mentioned that I like played a couple of instruments, and someone was like, oh, you gotta, you know, check out the side chord and mention it. And like literally the day after I'd joined, I'd said, oh, you know, if anyone ever wants bass or guitar on a track, let me know. And immediately two people asked me to be on their songs. It was kind of, there was a lot fewer people at the time, and I think they were short on bassists especially. So yeah, Yana and M Grace both messaged me, and I ended up, I think like a couple days later, on their tracks on Deicide, which is the first album that I was on, maybe 4 days after I'd joined Blazeball, which was a bit of a wild ride. And then yeah, at the end of that week, there was obviously the Deicide premiere and also the Hekdang show on the same day.
Yeah.
And so that was a real, like, that was a big day. That was a big week for the Garages. And I'd literally just joined, and it was just this wild ride. And yeah, it's been great ever since.
That's awesome. So what are your musical and compositional backgrounds?
Yeah, most of my experience was when I was quite a bit younger. When I was growing up, my dad played guitar and I thought that was so cool. So I wanted to learn as well. The sort of main band that I was in when I was a teenager, from about as maybe 15 to 17-ish, we kept changing genres. So we started off as a bit of a like indie band, and we kind of decided that we wanted to be a bit more like Muse. And then by the end, I think we were like a funk band. So it was good to get the experience in those different genres. I was like in the worship band at church, and I was like in choirs and things like that. And like ultimately I kind of decided that I was going to distance myself from the church, but that experience was still really great because it taught me a lot about things like harmony and improvisation. And you know, it taught me a lot about my voice and kind of how to use it. But that was kind of when I was a bit younger, and I'd say for about a decade, I haven't really done very much at all. Just kind of, you know, played for myself, noodled around occasionally, but really the catalyst for that has been joining the garages, having this sort of incredible community of really talented people just around all the time is so inspiring. So that's been the main kind of driver for my more recent compositional musical adventures.
So speaking more specifically on Solar Eclipse, like, what was the process like for making the song? Like, how did it start?
So yeah, with all of my songs, I think they usually start by me having just a melody or a lyric or something in my head, and I go and record it into my voice notes app or write it down in my notes. And then, you know, when I'm sitting down to think about what I might want to write, I look through them and I'd say 9 times out of 10, it's rubbish. and sometimes, you know, I'll come across something and be like, oh, actually, yeah, maybe that could be something. And for this song specifically, it was kind of a patchwork of a few different ideas that I'd had at different times. I'd written this song that was, I think it was just a melody, but it was this kind of hymn thing, like a church hymn almost. And it's very like somber, and I liked it. I liked the way that the melody sort of flowed, but it didn't really feel like it was going anywhere. And then completely separately, I'd written this quite like jangly, like happy tune that had lyrics that were like, you just gotta keep on going. Like, it was completely different. And I found some chords for it that I really liked that ended up being the chords in Solar Eclipse. And then I wrote a sort of little bridge bit for it. And I was like, well, actually, this is starting to sound maybe a little bit sadder. Maybe I don't want to do this jangly thing. And so I ended up putting those two ideas together. The first thing that I came up with, like, that actually made it into the song was the oohs, that the first set of oohs, and then the chords are descent. So you've got this ascending melody and then the chords are descending. From that, I think I just kind of played around with it until I found something that I liked. At the same time, I had a vague idea about writing a song about the fact that solar eclipses were back in season 12, because it had just been after the long siesta. And so, yeah, those sort of ideas all kind of came together from this Frankenstein of different parts of songs that I actually didn't like very much, and put the best bits together to make something that I really liked.
So this song, along with a lot of your other work, is really heavily structured around vocal harmonies. Can you talk about the process of like working on those arrangements?
Mm-hmm. I love harmonies. Like, I'm an absolute sucker for a good close harmony. It just, you know, speaks to my soul in some way. In some ways, it's quite instinctive because of the kind of music that I have always listened to, like, I don't know, like Simon and Garfunkel and, I don't know, Destiny's Child when I was a kid. I was always like singing along with all the different parts. In some ways, I kind of don't have a particular process. What I do is to create a full scratch track, so just like a full sing through, even if that's not going to be the final vocal take, but I'll just sing through the whole song. So I compose the entire song first, with the melody and the chords, and then you know, I knew that there was bits where I kind of wanted to play around with some harmonies. So yeah, once I've created that full scratch track, that kind of demo for myself, I've got the full melody there, and so I'll listen to the parts where I'm like, I really feel like a harmony would work really well here. I'll sing it through, like maybe sing a harmony over the top of it, and then listen back to it and think, you know, does this work? And if it doesn't quite work, or if there's like one or two notes that are a little bit shaky, or I'm not entirely sure where they're supposed to be, I might get the keyboard out and like actually figure out, okay, what is that note? And then like what chord is underneath it? And then, you know, find the note that goes with it. But for the most part, it's just, I hear it and then I sing along to it with something that I think sounds nice. And then kind of new for this song, something I haven't really done before, was sort of improvise, like entirely improvised sections of singing, where I just had the chords running underneath just in a section and then sang whatever came to my mind.
Oh my God.
That was a really cool thing that I knew that I wanted to do. But actually the process was very much like record a whole bunch of stuff and then listen back to it and take out the bits that do not work. So it's a kind of throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks approach to vocal harmony. But I think it works really well in the final thing. And what I then did was with the melodies that I decided I really liked, I listened back to those and then did harmonies over those melodies. So you've got these sort of like really interesting sort of melodies that kind of interplay with each other in different ways. And yeah, I really liked how it came out.
I know I put it in the sheet that I sent you prior to the interview. Do you know how many vocal parts there are in
this? Oh gosh, I should have counted this beforehand. There are 16 vocal tracks, but they're not all playing at the same time, so they have like slightly different effects on them and things. And I think the most tracks, vocal tracks that are playing at one time, I think there's maybe 13. That's in the kind of very climax of the song. I've got, I think, a melody and then a double for the melody and then a harmony. I think I've got two harmonies at that point and then like a whole bunch of oohs behind it. So yeah, it's kind of a very like rich part of the song. But yeah, I didn't really think about it like while I was doing it. I was just like, oh, okay. And then I could do this on top of that. And then I could do this on top of that. I wasn't like, I'm going to make a 13 part harmony. Like the guitars actually in the final track, some of them are me, but actually quite a lot of them are Rolo, who is my partner, and is just a guitar wizard. I don't know how he does it. He just does amazing things with like layering different guitar parts and then panning them so that it sort of like it fills up the space. So
yeah.
I just really love the way that it sounds. Like when I listen back to the demo, it just sounds really thin. You know, hearing the final product with these like really expansive guitars, it's just amazing. So I'm glad that I kept the guitar in. There was a brief moment where I was just mixing the vocals and I was hearing it a cappella and I was like, oh, maybe this could be an a cappella song. And I think it probably does work quite well as an a cappella song, but actually in the end the guitars do add this sort of like richness and fill out the space much more than, how would you put it, like the, because my voice is quite high, so like you wouldn't, without the guitars you wouldn't get those like bass tones that end up, yes, kind of filling out the space.
Shifting gears a little bit, mm-hmm. Did you have any particular like inspirations on this track musically or otherwise?
I didn't write the song kind of thinking, oh, I really want it to sound like this, or like with any particular inspirations in mind at the time. But I think once I'd written it and listened back to it, it sort of became clear that like, oh, right, I see where I've got this from. In fact, there is a part of it that I absolutely did not realize I was doing at the time, but the bit that I was talking about earlier with the ascending melody and the oohs and the descending chord progression is pretty much exactly the same. There's a guitar part in a Ray LaMontagne song called Hold You in My Arms, I think. And the beginning of that track is like, it's the same melody. But I mean, it is just like an ascending melody up the scale. But it was just really interesting how I like listened back to it and I was like, oh, that's what it sounds like. And then, yeah, apart from that, I think the influences here are kind of just bands that I really like listening to. Like the Staves are incredible. They're sisters and they just like harmonize with each other and it's so natural and so beautiful. And other bands like Julian Baker and Phoebe Bridges and their band Boy Genius, and kind of, as I said before, like Simon and Garfunkel, like their incredibly close vocal harmonies in thirds. And then also Dodie, I think, as well. She has like a really beautiful way of like singing in this very soft voice that I'd never really thought, like I'd always associated, if you're a good singer, then you're a powerful singer. But like, I think kind of listening to her music, I've realized that like, actually there's different emotions that you can get out of your voice, and it doesn't always have to be like a big belt.
Yeah,
you know, you can use it in different ways. And then I think the final influence that I kind of realized after the fact was I use a minor four chord where your ear would expect a major four chord. Huh. Which is not something that I like conceptualized in those terms when I was writing it, because I'm not really a music theory person, but yeah. There's this thing where like your ear kind of hears the chord and goes, oh, that's different. And I was talking about it with someone after the fact and they were like, oh yeah, that's like the British chord, like that's a British thing, you know. And I was like, is it? I didn't realize. You know what, that actually got me to Google it. You don't have to include this bit, but I thought it was really interesting. And I found this Reddit thread in music theory and someone was like, why does the minor four chord sound so nice or something like that? And this comment says, using the minor four chord, e.g. F minor when in C major, has that deep sentimental feeling because F minor doesn't belong in C major, it belongs in C minor. So you get this moment of reflection as if you've been chilling in the sunlight and then you consider the darkness. And I was like, I wrote about a solar eclipse and used this chord. And apparently it's the chord that means that you feel like you've been chilling in the sunlight and suddenly you reflect on the darkness. I thought that was so interesting.
Speaking of, too, there is a joke within the garages that our songs are totally about Blazeball and absolutely nothing else, even though very often it is to the contrary. As far as Solar Eclipse goes, thematically and like lyrically, what does this song mean to you, like both within and like outside of the scope of Blazeball?
Yeah, there is that kind of that joke, because I think with a lot of garages songs in general, you know, we use this as kind of, we use Blazeball as a writing prompt and then it kind of expands from there. But having said that, I think the other songs that I've written very much haven't been anything but Blazeball songs. Like Rooting For You is just a bunch of vegetable puns, and even Parker McMillan the Fourth was like quite a sad song. But it really just came out of me being like, wouldn't it be really funny if I wrote this incredibly sincere song about the commissioner who only ever tweets, hi, best friends, and what? Like, so, you know, this was kind of the first song where I kind of in earnest wanted to create a song that was very personal to me.
Yeah.
Within the lens of Blazeball, I had joined in season 11 and the only weather in season 11 had been Sun 2 and Black Hole, which did make for an interesting season. I knew about incinerations, but I'd never personally seen one, as much as you can personally see anything in Blazeball. But then, yeah, we had the long siesta, and then when we came back from that, and I was, you know, checking out the website and watching a couple of games, I noticed that, you know, oh, solar eclipse weather is back. And like then thinking about that from the viewpoint of a Blazeball player, like any baseball player. I didn't kind of have a specific one in mind. And thinking like, what would it be like to, you know, turn up after this, you know, in canon decade long break and then realize like we might die.
Yeah.
And like that was really the kind of spark of the song. And I think that prompted thoughts about like, well, how do you just keep on doing your job? Like, how do you keep on going, just doing normal everyday things when there's this like looming threat of death? The minute I had this thought about how do you keep going and how do you keep going with normal life where there's the threat of death hanging over you, I was like, oh, well, that's the pandemic. I'm personally like a high risk person. I'm a person at high risk of complications and potentially death if I were to contract COVID or any respiratory infection. And so it really is this song about just the kind of working through those feelings of just trying to keep on going and keep on living your life and doing the things that you enjoy doing when there's this constant looming threat. And the song's kind of in three parts, I think. I didn't really think about this while I was writing it, but the first part is really kind of like setting the scene. You know, we're in this baseball field and suddenly we realize that the sky is going dark and, oh gosh, we know what this means. It means that we could die. And then the second part is like kind of telling yourself like, you've just got to keep on going. You know, I know everything feels so wrong, but and everything is different and the world's turned upside down, but you just have to keep on going. And then the third part, which is really the like meat of the song lyrically, is the bit where it starts like, I know that the gods don't respond to petitions, but we do our jobs in the worst of conditions. You know, we pitch and we bat and we stare into death. That from that part onwards, it's really just the like raw emotion of like, this sucks.
I know that the gods don't respond to petitions, but we do our jobs in the worst of conditions. The moon hides the sun and we all hold our breath, and we pitch and we bat and we stare into death.
Yeah, very like existential bring you into the void of like, I'm not really like a particularly angry person or a sad person, but like, you know, these emotions of like, I think what really sparked them, especially at the beginning of the pandemic when we didn't really know what was going on, we were getting kind of like rates of death and things like that in the news, and then on like social media and like the government updates and things like that, and the rhetoric that was around it at the time was like, oh, don't worry, it's only elderly and disabled and people with underlying conditions that are dying, it's okay. And so me being one of those people was like, is it okay? Like, I would like to live, please. I really like that. And so, yeah, just kind of dealing with feelings of like, oh gosh, my life is worthless. Like, I'm considered worthless. And, you know, this is something that like I could probably rant about for ages. But, you know, with the UK having like a Tory government that like has constantly displayed that it just does not care about disabled people's lives.
Yeah.
And then that being like amplified during the pandemic, a lot of my anger with that went into this song, and specifically in the last four lines that I wrote. I kind of got to that part of the song and I'd written the rest of it and it felt like it was missing something, and I almost had to kind of say to myself like, you're still hiding behind this baseball metaphor, just write how you feel. And that's when the kind of like last four lines came out, which start like, I'm tired of wondering how I can manage if my life's just acceptable collateral damage. Don't want to be forgotten, don't want to forgive. Is it so bad that I just want to live? Was like, that's the core of this song. That's what I mean when I'm singing this.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that feeling of being like, is it acceptable to people if I die. So heavy to be talking about on this podcast.
Yeah.
But like,
well, yeah, but like,
but yeah, that's, I mean, that's what the song's about, is like, yeah, just feeling like completely undervalued, and just kind of saying like, I'm a person, I exist, is it okay that I want to live, like, so yeah, that's, I mean, that's what the song is about. It is the heaviest thing I've ever written.
I feel like a lot of us in songwriting processes especially, but just in general, like as a fan watching Blazeball unfold, there are a lot of things that feel relatable, even if the sort of framework of it is absurd, you know?
Yeah. And I think actually that kind of absurdity of it, it sort of helps that, you know, at the end of the day, these aren't real people, but they still deal with things that are real, like grief and like death and like these really heavy subjects. But actually, you know, being able to, in the middle of a global pandemic, like process those things in what is a relatively kind of safe environment, has been, I think, part of the success of Blazeball. Is that, you know, it's so absurd, but actually caring about it is a way of processing the absurdity that is happening in real life. And I think that was the case with this song for me. I like it started off as a Blazeball song and ended up with me like really processing some deep emotions.
Yeah. God, that's so incredible too, that like, not only for the medium to be able to give us these opportunities to sort of like hide behind something with a shared thematic intent and then be able to build up the confidence to then just like knock that wall down and be like, okay, this is what the song is about actually.
Yeah.
Has been so like impactful, I think, on like not just mine too, but like so many people's songs.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think it's part of what makes The Garages so special is, you know, and Blazeball music in general, is just that, you know, we're all kind of like writing from the same prompt, but it doesn't mean that we're not, you know, writing from the heart. And I think that's maybe what separates it from just fan music. Not that, you know, not that fan music is bad, fan music is great, but like, you know, I think that people who listen to The Garages maybe don't expect it to be so personal. But then, as I've said, some of the songs are just about, you know, cool vegetable women playing Blazeball and thinking that they're hot. So, yeah. You know, it's a bit of both.
Yeah. So, lastly, outside of your own work, what would you consider the most underrated Garages song? I realize this is like part of the hardest questions in this whole set list.
At this point, there's so many good Garages songs. The one that comes to mind, I think Roster as an album in general kind of ended up being a little bit lost because it was in the middle of the long siesta. One that I just keep going back to is Oliver Mueller Is a Hero by Mango, or AMFSH, I think. And the lyrics written by Tangerine Velveteen, just like, is so much fun, and like, it's a really good ska song, and it just makes me happy when I hear it. Like, that's yeah, one of my absolute favorites. And then if I'm allowed to sneak in a second little one, like Hold Me in Your Arms from Valentine by Fizabelle is just such a beautiful song, like lyrically and just like the melody. Oh, it's amazing. And I do think that Valentine as well, kind of maybe just because it was just before Blazeball coming back, like really unfortunately got a little bit overshadowed by, oh gosh, Blazeball's back and now we have to write about Blazeball.
Yeah.
So yeah, like those two albums, but also like, yeah, though specifically those two songs are just ones that I just keep going back to. They're so good.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jen. This has been so much fun. And thank you to everyone who's listening for joining us on Idleboard, a podcast where we interview members of The Garages, an anarcho-syndicalist Blazeball band from the fictional location of Seattle. We make songs about being gay, the apocalypse, and fighting the gods, and you can find our music at blandcamp.com, with an L, on YouTube or on your favorite music streaming service. We'll see you next week. Now, here is Solar Eclipse by Jennifer Catt of The Garages.
Watching the sky as it starts to go dark, and I hear a hush falling over the park. I don't know what changes a decade can bring, but I know an eclipse can mean only one thing. The sun has gone now.
Idleboard is edited by Ada Quinn, Bones, Jennifer Cat, and Nuclear Tourist. Hosted by Bones, produced by Tangerine Velveteen, transcribed by Astrid D, Sigilcrafter Aya, Mary, and Vigilant Baker, and created by Aoife and Tangerine Velveteen.
That was a Four Strike production.